I think the biggest thing, and I don't even know where to start on this challenge, is global warming. So I think we just hit like a billion packages worldwide. I think it's set to double in the next 4 years. I don't know how we're going to do that sustainably.
Welcome to Profiles by Chain.io. I'm Brian Glick, Chain.io's founder and CEO. Over the coming weeks and years, we'll feature the partners and customers who make up the Chain.io network. We'll focus on learning about the individuals within these companies and how they've helped build the organizations that drive our network. Together, we'll learn what drew them to the industry, why they made it such a big part of their lives, and where they see us all going in the future. Today, we have with us Jenna Brown. Jenna is the CEO and co-founder of Shipamax. Shipamax is a really cool company that's on the Chain.io network that is helping freight forwarders and carriers automate the data collection from those customers that are still sending you documents and PDFs. So they are ensuring compliance and workflows that are far beyond what many of us have experienced over the years with normal scanning and OCR. And have really, really stepped up from that to a more comprehensive solution. Jenna comes from the trading and commodity world, which we're going to learn about a little bit in the episode, and it was certainly new to me. So we hope you enjoy the episode, and here we go. Hi, Jenna. Thanks so much for being here today.
No, thank you.
So why don't we start with, tell me a little bit about how you got into technology and supply chain technology specifically.
So I guess supply chain, actually, I get this question a lot because it's not obvious. So about 10 years or so ago, I used to work in a physical commodity trading house. And obviously when you're trading physical commodities, you need to move them from A to B. So I think that was my first foray into the logistics world.
That's an interesting topic that I think a lot of us don't know about. So when you're trading these commodities, you actually become responsible for the delivery of them and the logistics behind all of that?
Yes, exactly. So, take me back, but obviously you've got in trading or commodities trading, at least you have your kind of physical markets and then your paper markets. In the physical markets, you are essentially, just moving things around the world, like, you know, getting coal from, you know, X mine to the power plant or whatever it is. And you can do that for a real need, or you can do it. You can go long on shipments. You can go short on shipments. And yes, if you don't do the right thing, you might get a pile of coal getting delivered when you do not want it to be delivered.
And imagine that's a bad thing. Okay, so how did you go from that to running a tech company?
Yeah, so I didn't stay in that industry for a super long time. I realized I was spending a lot of time at the weekends really getting kind of obsessed with what was going on in the startup world. And I basically just applied for a job at this kind of very small company at the time, and then ended up going a completely different direction and into the startup world instead.
So what was it about this industry, I guess the supply chain side of it, that you were like, okay, I want to build a life around solving problems here?
Yeah, so I think I wanted to start a company for a very long time. I never really found exactly what I wanted to do. I think what struck me about logistics is I think I just really enjoy the complexity. I think it is the largest, furthest reaching optimization problem you can work on. There are all these moving parts across the globe, and it really has an impact on every single living person. And I guess it's like, what's not to kind of love about that? It's just super interesting.
It's I'm laughing because I agree with you. but I had my first boss in the industry said to me, I was in charge of just setting up it wasn't even PCs, it was dumb terminals. And he said, you know, don't put too much effort into any of these setups, because we were a customs broker. And after lunch for the employee's first day, if they come back, we're going to have them for their whole lives. But a lot of them don't come back from lunch once they see the problem. They go, oh my God, this is terrifying. So those of us who love it get it, but I don't think we could explain it to somebody who doesn't.
Yeah, so, no, I think that makes sense.
So who were some of your big influences along your journey to get to this point?
I have had a lot of really, really good mentors, but I think actually, honestly, with respect to my career, I've pretty much gone against everyone's advice. I think sometimes it's more important to like figure out like what you're kind of obsessed with and then go for that. Hence, when I kind of realized I was spending all this time at the weekend just looking at this thing that wasn't financial markets. And I can't remember exactly when I joined startups, like 2012 or something like that. But like back then, certainly in the UK, that wasn't the accepted thing to do. That wasn't cool. It was very much like, what are you doing? So yeah, I think, I'm not sure there was one kind of guiding light there.
So narrowing down even further, kind of what was interesting to you about this whole idea? Well, actually explain what ShipMax does, because we should probably give everyone else the context, and then why.
The easiest way of explaining it is we make it easy or simple for any kind of a logistics company to automate their back office processes, usually starting with data entry. Now, why did I start that? Actually, when we started, it wasn't that. So we had definitely a few pivots along the way. When we started out, the company was originated because we had seen, my kind of co-founder and I, we had seen the process for booking bulk ships for moving bulk commodities was just woeful. And we wanted to almost create an online brokerage to solve that, like kind of, the flexible of the bulk world, if you like. And we kind of went into that and realized it was a really horrible idea. And that was, pretty painful. And fortunately, in doing so, we had created a piece of technology, because in the bulk shipping market, it's different from what I call the normal logistics market, where I think like normal logistics is like booking a seat on a bus. There are all these kind of routes and you can kind of, book slots. And I know that's a bit of a sweeping statement, but broadly speaking, that's the way it works. In bulk logistics, you're booking an entire ship. So it's much more akin to this trading environment. And what happens every day is they email each other like this massive, like, oh, I need this ship, like this ship's available. And you get like 3,000 emails a day of just like supply and demand. So we built the tool to kind of extract all the data from that and structure it and extract the meaning so you could actually use it. And we then kind of flipped our company to start selling that data structure and understanding to that bulk shipping market. So that's when we kind of really started to evolve as a company to where we are today. And then we had maybe another pivot after that on who we sold that technology to.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that more of us founders should talk about more is that very few of us run the company that we intended to start. And I would say certainly for us at Chain, the North Star of making it easier for companies to work together hasn't changed. But the entire going in premise of our company was creating the central data model where we would have a picture of the current state of the entire global supply chain and all of the data in this, in this kind of data store. And what we ended up with was actually the 180 degree opposite, which was looking at all the data moving, but never looking at that whole picture. And it's the ability to kind of say, hey, we're solving the problem, but the tactics are going to be completely different is admirable. And I think that's a thing that not a lot of startup
world people talk about enough is the difference between that North Star strategy and the tactics that you use to get there.
Yeah, definitely. It's really interesting how things evolve.
So what do you wish that you knew at the beginning, like that? So as you've gone through all these evolutions, like what has, what are you like, man, I wish I could tell myself X years ago.
I guess there are a lot of things, but I think the thing more recently that really hit me is I wish I would have hired in more senior people early. It makes such a big difference. Like this load is lifted off you because you're kind of just sharing this burden of everything with people who are kind of wildly more competent than you. I wish I would have done that a long time ago.
And then you and I just get to sit around having chats and talking on podcasts while everyone else is doing a better job than we would have done in the first place, right?
Yeah, exactly. The work from home, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't think work from home means quite what it used to, but so what do you think is tough for people who might be coming into this today, you know, either from the tech startup space or especially in logistics? Is there kind of advice you would give?
So I think, and actually I'm curious to get your thoughts on this because I think you have very different views on this. I know you're a big distributed team fan. I definitely more old school. And I think the pandemic really tested some of my assumptions and kind of thoughts there. I do think that, or I kind of worry about, you know, when new people come into, whether it's this industry, the tech industry, whatever, and, you know, you're looking for that kind of fast progression, you're trying to absorb everything. Like, how does that work when people are not there?
Well, so what do you like about being in the office?
Like everything. Everything. I love, I don't know, the serendipity. I love that it forces discipline. By the way, I love, like, one thing I did find was very funny, like, at the start of the pandemic, people were always like, yeah, I want work from home because I'm gonna go for this run and I'm gonna do this stuff. And like, let's be honest, we all kind of just got fat during this thing. So I don't know. I just think it drives that, I don't know, serendipity, the drive to get things done. I think you learn, I think you just hear all these things going on around you so that you can chip in and actually resolve them. I just find the communication so much easier. I don't know. You kind of sit on the other side of the table to this.
I do, you know, I was having this conversation with a couple of CEOs here in Philadelphia the last week about, you know, and one of them is fully back in the office and they have a team about the same size as ours. And for him, kind of same points.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things that came up was he said that almost every job applicant that he's talking to wants to be in the office. He's like, it's 100% of people want to be back in the office. Yeah. And I said to him, well, almost every job applicant we're talking to wants to be full-time remote.
Interesting.
And I said, I think that there's people are, not to get Harry Potter on this, but they're sorting, right? Into the right houses for themselves, right? And, you know, for me, and this was always a big thing, was having the space to work the way that I feel is best for me.
Yeah.
And that for me, like I actually go to the office every day, but I'm the only one in our entire company who goes to the office every day. And everyone else, you know, people come in every once in a while, but we're able to draw from such a wider talent pool because we can recruit globally.
Yeah.
You know, and just even just here in the US in the last year, we've hired people in every time zone, 14 states or something in, you know, just this year. So that talent pool, and anything we're losing from not being in the office, I feel like we're gaining from getting people from, you know, and where I am is not a big logistics hub in Philadelphia. Yeah. So the size of the talent pool we're drawing from is just amazing. And I think that, I think it's worth, yeah, I mean, there's definitely benefits to people getting together and face-to-face conversations and the like, but I don't think for us, especially because our customers are so global, right? It's not like we're interacting with them in, you know, we're doing implementation right now with a freight company where the project team is spread across three or four cities in Europe and the west coast of Canada.
Yeah.
And it's like, so where would we be anyway? Yeah. Right. But I think that I don't think there's a right answer.
Yeah.
Right? I think there's every company, you know, and I actually learned this probably more from being married than from running a company, but like there's things you do inside your own relationships that seem weird to other people, like how you, you know, they used to have this, I don't know if it was just in the US, but they used to just in the 90s, just badger, you know, families that eat dinner together at 6 o'clock every night are the families that are successful. And they created all this, like that's what you had to do. And my family doesn't run that way and we're great. Right. Yeah. So I think companies can be the same way. We can all have different personalities and different lifestyles, and there's no right answer. There's just what works.
Yeah. That's an interesting, that's an interesting take.
So I have a very relativistic view, I guess, of that.
You can be in the Southern and the.
And we wouldn't get to work with you guys if we weren't so broad based and international and all of those fun things. So kind of going from that, like, we know we've had this challenge of the pandemic. We've had the challenges of an industry that is 30 or 40 years behind a lot of other industries. But kind of what are the next set of challenges? What do we as a group of technologists in the supply chain have to work on together?
I think the biggest thing, and I don't even know where to start on this challenge, is global warming. So I think we just hit like a billion packages worldwide. I think it's set to double in the next 4 years. I don't know how we're going to do that sustainably. And I think it's also, if you think about logistics, it's again, that fragmented world, that kind of global fragmented world. And that kind of amplifies, you know, the tragedy of the commons effect. And I'm just like, I don't know how this is going to work out.
No, I entirely agree. And I give a lot of thought to, I'll be honest, like even being in this industry, like, are you perpetuating the problem? Or are you helping to solve it? Right. And I think ultimately, without being too easy on us, like if you're not, like 8 billion people need things.
Yeah.
Right. And they need things to be places. And so it's not that fundamentally our industry is bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's a question a lot of times of alignment. And right now, everything's aligned to giving the consumer whatever they want, whenever they want it.
Yeah.
Right. At almost no matter what the cost.
Yeah.
And that doesn't seem healthy to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and how can we, you know, I think a number of years ago worked with some companies on, you know, just carbon footprint reporting, but it was internal reporting or it was board reporting or it was investor reporting.
Yeah.
But it wasn't trying to drive their customer behavior, right, to moving things slower, right? Yeah. Just consumes less energy.
Yeah.
You know, air consumes more energy than ocean, and right. And how do we educate people that, you know, do you really need that thing tomorrow?
Yeah.
Like, are you going to use it tomorrow?
Yeah.
Or are you just choosing tomorrow because tomorrow costs the same as 6 days from now?
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, why is that? And, you know, I've been caught myself using Amazon Prime and going, oh, you know, I probably don't need this as a Prime shipment. They can, because they'll give us one, they have a day of week delivery option, at least here in the US, where you can say, look, just send me at anything I order, just give it to me on Tuesday. So it's one shipment.
I don't think we have that.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool thing. But it at least makes you take that moment to go, hey, do I really need the carbon impact of them accelerating this product through their supply chain?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I start to feel really bad. I obviously do a lot of Amazon orders as well. And just like the amount of Amazon cardboard boxes I have, it's like, this can't be great for anyone.
Cool. So what are you guys working on now? What's the next stuff for ShippaMax?
Yeah. So actually, I was thinking about it. It's something you are almost helping us with, actually. So we, for the past 2 years, I guess, when we've been selling to the kind of forwarding or broader kind of 3PL, 4PL, et cetera, industry, we've sold our products more often than not as a kind of pre-packaged product. So you get your kind of data extraction elements, you get this intelligent process automation kind of wrapped around it, and then the integrations. And what we're starting to do now is we're at a point where we are able as an organization to break some of those services out, which just makes us much more kind of scalable and extendable and all that kind of stuff. And obviously one of those components is the integration parts where I know we're working on at the moment for a couple of companies. But yeah, this is probably one of the big things I'm allowed to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, so I mean, maybe just to dig into that a little bit more, I think what I'm hearing is, you know, there are people who need data extraction from data sources. There are people who need business process automation. Yeah. But sometimes if you're a large organization, say, I already have business process or automation, I just need data extraction. Or I really kind of am already getting structured data, but I don't know how to deal with it before it gets into my TMS or what have you. Is it?
It's a good question. We probably wouldn't. The starting point is the data extraction. So I don't think, for example, we would do, you know, the integrations or the process automation without that layer. But it's more that, yeah, you're right. Sometimes the processes people want to automate are not within our use cases. And it's like, well, you could just take the API and build your own use case. Kind of the example we've been working on is like, they have the data extraction need, they have the use case need, but we didn't support the ERP. So then we kind of got you guys in to help build that out. So it's just making it a little bit more flexible and allowing different use cases. And there's some really interesting applications of the use case, especially in very large organizations that have in-house development teams, and they're working on something very, very different that we might not just pre-package for everyone. And that enables them to start working with us as well.
So do you think this is a market segment thing? Because we, you know, I see this all over the place, but that mid-market and smaller companies want a turnkey solution and the big companies want to buy pieces to be more a la carte. Is that a reasonable way to think about it?
In part, I think we still see like the large companies, if the kind of the automation app exists, if you like, they'll use it. But what we're just seeing is we're turning away companies at the moment because we didn't have that explicit use case kind of pre-built out. I'm like, well, actually, you know, you guys have your own like really good development team. It's probably not an app, if you like, that we're going to build out. Why not just take the API and then feed that into your kind of own stack?
Awesome. That makes a lot of sense. And I think there's that this layer of it's funny how IT and systems inside of companies have changed from internal developers building applications to now internal developers almost acting like citizen integrators and bringing together solutions that they're buying from on a SaaS basis.
Yeah.
Right. And becoming everybody's an integration company at some point, which is scary for me to say as an integration company, but, but it is, I think it's a big shift in the industry.
Yeah. In fact, I think one of the use cases we might also be, I think there's three companies involved, and I think you're one of them. So it's like basically pre-packaging all the kind of different parts for actually a very different use case from what we usually do.
Yeah, I think it's something actually that executives inside of 3PLs may not be asking the question yet the right way of their IT departments, which is like, here's getting back to that North Star concept, like, here's what we need to get done.
Yes.
How can we assemble this solution as opposed to how can we build this solution?
Yeah.
they both involve writing code.
Yes.
But using the different word at the beginning of the process can change the whole mindset of, okay, let's go get ShippoMax involved. Let's go get Chain.io involved. Let's go get, you know, somebody like, you know, I don't know, Descartes containers involved for like when things have to come in through the web, because what we really are worried about here is order ingestion. Yeah. And how do we assemble order ingestion from in an omni-channel way, right? Which might be getting PDFs in from some customers and having some on our website and having some of them send an API and assemble a bunch of SaaS solutions that then feed into that back-end big heavy ERP pipeline.
Yeah.
If you ask the question as an executive the right way, you're going to get a very different answer than if you go to your team and say, we need to build this, because they will presuppose that starting from zero at a blank code code screen is the place to start.
Yeah.
And that's not the way of SaaS.
Yeah, I think that's also, it's maybe like just a journey of tech maturity. So for example, in both our respective kind of domains, using a provider is still kind of new, because they're kind of still newish technologies. Whereas, let's say hosting, one would hope that when someone says, hey, we're going to migrate to cloud, people don't spin up their own kind of Amazon or Azure nowadays. Maybe they do. But I think hopefully we'll get there where people realize actually they can just piece all these things together.
I am old enough to have made the argument to a CFO that we should move stuff out of our data center and lost the argument. So into very early stage cloud hosting. And they're like, no, we have to physically have it here or nothing's going to work.
Yeah.
So I remember that. But yeah, I think that that SaaS evolution, I think there's other industries where it's probably moved a little faster. And I think it's probably some of the more cross-cutting ones like marketing automation and the like, where the whole idea of the problems they're solving are net new.
Yeah.
Like there wasn't 50 years of tech for marketing automation to displace, but since we're doing that, it's harder for us than it is for spaces like that. Or like, that's why Salesforce was such a great starting solution for SaaS, because there really was nothing good. I mean, yeah, I remember using things like ACT back in the 90s that were just desktop CRMs, and there was no, they created a space, and we're trying to modernize against a legacy environment. Yeah. So it's a lot more resistance, I think.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting take.
So, well, hopefully soon we're going to get to do these face-to-face live recordings instead of over the internet. Thanks so much for being here. This was a lot of fun.
No, cool. Thank you very much.